Okie nestune taniku, mikimitaki. My name is Kyla Bird. I'm from the Blackfeet Nation, Omskapi Bakani. I am a student here at MSU as well as a youth advocate. I lost my train of thought now. I'm glad you guys are all here. Thank you for being here. Thank you for giving us your attention and listening.
My name is Joaquin Smaldriguez, and my tribe is the Tisistas, and it's Northern Cheyenne. And I'm glad everybody is here present, and those who are streaming online on Facebook, and that this is an important event, and that I'm glad that everybody is really here to show good support.
My name is Ronnie Joe Horse, and I'm a senior in the education and history majors. And I'm a citizen of the Northern Cheyenne and Ogallala Lakota Nations, and I thank everyone for being here today. Thank you.
Good day. My name is Ona Tang. I am a senior in political science. I am a citizen of the Northern Cheyenne Nation and an ally to the Oshitas Kalan. Thank you.
Ha Madakyapi. Chante washteyan ape chiusapi. Wagli huni wachiwe imachiapi. My name is Connie Brownotter. I am an enrolled member of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. I am also Dene. I am a sophomore here at MSU studying community health, minoring in Native American studies, and considering picking up another minor in sociology. My affiliation with Standing Rock is I've lived there my entire life, and that's my home. Thank you guys all for coming. Thank you for giving us your attention, and hope you enjoyed chatting with us. And thanks for your questions.
Hello, my name is Kamalee Oldkayo. I am an enrolled member of the Crow in Eastern Montana, but I grew up on the Salish Reservation. I'm a sophomore in organismal biology with a minor in NAS. I was able to travel to Standing Rock this November, and it was a great experience. And I thank you all for being here and for participating in this informational forum.
Namah shuksu kataha gidibas na Marina Machto. Tatachita kanit vidant sanu nasenish. Hello, my relatives. My name is Marina Mateau. I come from the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara tribes, which is located in northwestern North Dakota on the Fort Berthold Indian Reservation. I am originally from Dickinson, North Dakota, and I have lived in North Dakota for the past 18 years of my life. I am technically a sophomore here at MSU, but my first year here. And I am a major in paleontology with a minor in NAS. And I've been to Standing Rock about 5 times now, and my first weekend there was over Labor Day weekend when the dogs were attacking people. So I wanted to thank everybody here for coming here, and just curious, who is here because of extra credit? Just want to know. Don't be shy. Okay. Yeah, I'm glad that the classes here did that. So please have questions for us. We'll all be happy to answer them. So thank you.
Awesome. So thank you, everyone. And as it's been made clear, all these people have been to Standing Rock. I think the majority of them went around Veterans Day. Any other major times, just so we can have a timeline? Like, Kyla, when how many times have you been there? Okay, so mainly around August. So just so you kind of understand when these students were around there. But so now we can start with some questions. If anyone has any questions for the panel, yes, right over there. So the question was, what does the panel want everyone to know about Standing Rock?
I think we can all agree and say we want you to understand that it is a protector camp, that it is a peaceful place, and that it was very hard for us to leave. I've never felt more safe put it that way.
To go off of that, I couldn't agree more, Zona. The camp is very peaceful, and I also wanted to let everybody know that despite what the media portrays the protesters or the law enforcement, a lot of that is very exaggerated. A lot of the media will exaggerate events to make it seem like, to make you more, leaning more toward their side of the story. Because I've lived in North Dakota. I've lived there for 18 years, like I've said. And I know how the law enforcement is there. And I know how the people are there. And for me, it's not a racial fight. If it's a racial fight, it's either how some of the people make it out to be. Because when I was out there, I was up on the front lines during, I think it was in late October. And when I was up there, I have known about the police brutality. My mom was actually pulled over once when I was very little. And the cop said to her, this was not during the protest, this was when I was 6 years old. And here he said, you know, you natives aren't allowed here anymore. We took your lands. You should just leave. Well, where are we going to go? We were here first, but, you know, that's ironic because of how that happened. And so when I was thinking about that during up on the front lines, I was thinking about that the entire time. What if these cops say something similar, or what if they act in a similar nature? And when I was up there, I have never felt more terrified, because when you have police dressed in riot gear and beating their batons against their hands like this, what does that say to you? So I just want to say that what I want you guys to understand about Standing Rock is this is not a racially driven fight. This is everyone's fight. This is for water.
To add on to what Zona and Marina were saying, one thing I'd like people to know about Standing Rock is that in these camps, it is a prayerful environment. I don't want to say that everybody is violence-driven. These people are praying every single day throughout the day, and our intentions extend to everybody, not just the tribe. Like Marina was saying, this is not a racial, shouldn't be categorized as a racial confrontation. We're thinking about generations beyond our own. We're thinking about people beyond ourselves. We're not just thinking of Standing Rock tribal members. As we pray for this water and the protection of this water, we pray for people downstream, even upstream from this water source. So to keep that in mind, that this isn't just about Standing Rock. This is about a lot of other people as well, natives and non-natives alike. And that when we pray together and we set forth these good intentions together, there's that unity there that's involved within those prayers. So, yeah. That's it.
Thank you. Thank you for that. That was very powerful. Are there any other questions? So the question is, what was your most significant experience? What stuck with you the most during your time at the camps?
So I've been there a few times, and my most significant experience is the sense of community there. The fact, you know, where I come from, we're at the headwaters of the Missouri, and you know, that brings us all together, all down. You know, water brings us together. Water is life, and it connects us in that way. And my most significant experience is, you know, meeting tribes from all over, and the fact that that's what brought us together. That's what unified us from all across the world, essentially South America, you know, from everywhere. It brought us together, and we're all fighting for the same thing. We're fighting for our Mother Earth, and it's important that, you know, we come together in that fashion, and that we've all brought our prayers to one place, and that we continue to, you know, educate people and get the word out that this is going on and that this is going to keep happening, and we're, you know, we're fighting for our rights, our treaty rights, and, you know, everything that affects all of us, all of Native Nations in the United States. And I know I have friends from South America that are doing the same thing. And we're all uniting for the same reason and sharing resources. And I think that's really important for, you know, people to know that it's bringing all of us together, all colors, all nations from everywhere.
What was significant for me being there the first time was when it was Labor Day, and when we were settling down at night, I heard a lot of like peyote music going on, and I started to sing along with it, started praying, and I started to feel started to feel empowered from the land there, because we as Cheyenne people believe too that that's where we resided. We came through there, through both bands, the Sistas and the Sutai. They met there at the confluence of the river. And we know that, we always knew that that was sacred for us. And I also want to add, too, that, you know, I talked to somebody who was, he was an Aztec descendant, or he was Aztec, he was saying. He was telling me that there was a story that they've always known that when the condor meets the eagle, we would be as one people, he said. And he said that it was predicted. And look where we're at now, he told me. And I believe that, because it happened. And I also think of, like, my aunt who passed away, my Aunt Ruby. She used to tell a story. She would always say, when we were a free people, she'd always say that. And when I seen our people get ready to settle down, or maybe they're building a fire, they will tell stories, or maybe tell a joke. And I'd see them. I walk around and I looked around, and I thought to myself, this is what we once were. We were once a free people. How we lived in the teepees. That's who we are, you know. And that's who we were even at that camp. So I just wanted to say that much. Oh.
What I found significant at the camps was, the sense of the community. Everyone had their place there. Everyone had something to offer, whatever it was, gathering firewood, helping with security, cooking. Everyone just had, it felt like everything fell into place there. So I think that's what was most significant for me.
So I have a story. I'm from Busby, and we tell things in stories. I saw these things happening in April when I first went. It was in the beginning, like, of the summer, and they're calling for their allies. I grew up in an old way and always knowing that and celebrating our victory every year with our allies. We have White River Cheyenne Days now because of that. And so, and I heard, there's going to be Cheyennes out there. There will be. And then there's one Cheyenne out there. He don't even know, man, who he is. He's right here in the front row. Yep. Jay DeMint right there. He was one of the first Cheyennes out there. And they didn't have a flag. They didn't have a Cheyenne flag. Okay? I had this flag hanging up in my house for 10 years. I bought it with a $50 check from the tribe they give you when you graduate. I bought it. It was 50 bucks. And I hung it up in every house I went to. Because that's who I am. I'm a Cheyenne citizen first and foremost. So I took that flag. I said, I'm going to take it. My in-laws live in Bismarck. They're part of the Oshitisikawin. They're not enrolled tribes of Standing Rock or Cheyenne River. They're Oglala. So I was like, well, they're already out there. They can show us around. You know, we always send someone else ahead first to tell us how it is, and we come back. And that's how we do things. More and more people will go, get a sense of how it feels. So you get that scouting, scouting moccasins. That's the kind of moccasins I have. And so I took this flag, and I found Jade. And I said, let them know, go walk around with it, go ahead. Because I was walking around with it, letting them know that there were Cheyennes here now. And he took that flag, and he took it up, and he tied it on that fence for me. And not just for me, but for our entire nation. That's what he did. And so when you talk about where the Tistas Nasutta met, that's the Northern Cheyenne Nation. That's the nation. That's time immemorial. You can document it. That's the whole point. That's why our tipple was out there. Okay? And that's who I am. That's my alliance to the Ochitisakawan through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. I am the epitome of that. And so when I got to share that with my friends and my family, you know, that is something that resonates with me every day. So every day is significant to me because I got to enact what I've been always wanting to all my life. That's why I bought that flag. Like she said, things fell into place. So when I took my little sister out there during Veterans Day, I got to share that with her. And that's a bond. That's something that no one will ever take away.
For me, the most significant experience that I had back home was watching this movement sort of grow. I was there when, you know, I drive by camp where it is now, and there was literally like two teepees up and a handful of tents right there. And I remember months later driving by and just seeing how big it grew. There were hundreds of people there, thousands. I just saw it just blow up, you know, every week, every month. It was amazing. Like, all these people are here on this reservation where I grew up. And I don't think anyone's really heard of this reservation, to be honest. I never thought we were extremely significant or anything, you know, just where we were. And suddenly people from around the world, across the country, across Indian country, they're all coming out and uniting for a common cause. And that was beautiful to witness, to see that regardless of skin color, regardless of origin, regardless of, you know, spiritual background, all of these people, different ages, different everything you could say, all here together. Even like some of our, you know, historic enemies came in and joined us to help us. And, you know, I saw beauty in that. I really did. And it was amazing to see that unfold. Started as such a small movement, a small group of youth from Standing Rock got this petition signed, and they ran it all the way to Washington, D.C. And my little niece was part of that group, and my best friend was part of that group. I couldn't be a part of it because I had school, but I watched them. I followed them along on their journey, and I was supporting them, thinking about them, praying for them as they went along, and, you know, sacrificed their times, their bodies to do that. And just seeing the sacrifices people make for this cause, that's the beauty, that's the significance that I see. And that resonates most with me, is to see that people recognize, you know, when something needs to be done, and they step up, and they take the initiative, and they choose to do something to try to create change. And so seeing that happen over the months, it was just miraculous. It's very beautiful. So that would be my thing.
So I would say the most significant thing that I took away from going to Standing Rock would definitely be the enthusiasm and the determination of our youth that were there. We went to a candle lighting ceremony at night, and during, they asked us to pray for the cops and the military people who were there occupying this land in rejection to the native people who live there. And that is a huge moment of growth and of knowing where we stand even though that we're the underdogs, we still had this respect of somewhat of respect for them enough to pray for them. And after, we met with the youth council, who gave a great speech, who was moving, and it was empowering, and it brought us back down to earth, that this is the future, that there are people, there are Native youth who want to make a difference in Native country, who have decided that the years, the hundreds and hundreds of years of genocide, of assimilation, of fractionization, of reservations, that they said this is enough, that we are going to define our tribal sovereignty, that we're going to stand up for our rights, and we're going to fight for what we should already possess and already have control over. And that is something that will forever change my impact and will forever make my decision as a Native person to go back to our communities and to help our people. And that there are more youth coming up who were younger. There were children there who were all empowered by this movement, by this idea that we can make a difference as marginalized people. I think that will be the forever significance that I take from Standing Rock, and it will apply to my everyday decision for the woman that I become for my community and my Indigenous blood.
One thing that stood out for me was when I wasn't even there, it was my mom, and it was the day that the Backwater Bridge was shut down because of the debris that was blocking it and the events that were taking place during that time. Because my mother went down there, she posted a status, she said she was watching the live streams and said, "I can't take this anymore, I'm going to go down there." And I believe it was on a Wednesday and or a Thursday. And she messaged me and she said, "Marina, I'm gonna go down to Ocheti Shakwin and I'm gonna go help them down there." And I had been watching the live streams of what was going on, and here I was just like, "You better be careful. Because Braden and Jonica, those are my two siblings, they're at home. So don't get arrested." We don't need to add that. And please don't get hurt. And she went down there. But since there's no cellular signal out there because of the cellular blocks, she couldn't text me, and neither could my stepdad. So as they were going down there and helping, I got more and more anxious, because what if something did happen to my parents? My brother and sister live in Dickinson, which is a good 8 hours away. And if I sped, that wouldn't have really helped. So I was thinking about that, because what if something happened to my parents and I had to go back to Dickinson just to watch my brother and sister? I wouldn't be able to get there right away. And my brother and sister, my brother, he's in seventh grade, and my sister, she's in fourth. And they are not, granted that my brother could probably watch her, still, you don't ever know. So when she came back from Standing Rock saying that she was okay, I was so relieved. But what really bugged me was when she said she helped out a news reporter that was down there. I won't say his name, but she helped a news reporter down there who had been getting chased by Kyle Thompson, and if any of you know who that is, that's the guy who had the AR-15 rifle out there threatening to shoot people. And this was a man going 65 miles per hour down a 25 mile per hour lane, chasing a news reporter with no regard of people on the side of the road. There were people walking toward the front line, and they almost got run over because this particular person, this Kyle Thompson, was chasing after a news reporter trying to stop him from uploading valuable news feed. It says a lot. And I later found out that this Kyle Thompson was half Mandan Hidatsan or Rikara, which is a part of my tribe. And let me tell you, I never felt more ashamed of being Mandan Hidatsa Narikara than I did then. because a lot of us know that a lot of Rickaraw scouts were on the side of General Custer. We were working with the Crow and fighting against the Sioux. But this story just tells me that it doesn't really matter who's out there, who's pro-pipeline or who's no dapple. It just shows that there are people on both sides. And when my mom was out there and she told me about this, she said, you know, he's not a part of our tribe. He's not. He may be enrolled, but he's not there spiritually. And that adds on to the fact that there were so many people out there that went out there to help out people, because my mom drove all the way from Dickinson out to Standing Rock, and that takes about an hour and a half to 2 hours just to get out there. And she just went out there. And that it says a lot, because there's people who will go out there just to help, whether it be on the weekends or whether you're there full time. And I was there when, I believe it was during Thanksgiving break, when the camp was at its most full capacity, about good 10,000 people. And that's about, I can't really say for Dickinson, but that's about the size, I believe. And Dickinson is not a very big town, it's an oil boom town. So just to see so many people gathering around Standing Rock and to see that people are supporting this cause is just amazing, because it doesn't matter who you are. You could be a celebrity. And, like, we went down there Veterans Day weekend and we saw Neil Young and we didn't know that was him. That just shows that it doesn't really matter who you are. I could have probably seen other people and I could just say, like, they're here to support us. They're here to support this tribe, to protect water. And so that's one of the most significant things about the camps, is how many people can go out there, whether it be like by airplane or by hitchhiking. I met somebody who hitchhiked all the way from Florida up to Standing Rock. So that's one of the most significant things, I think.
Thank you. Thank you all for your awesome answer to that question. Can I get a round of applause for our panel members? So with our last 10 minutes of our panel, can I have our awesome water protectors up here in the front row come up and just talk about some of the important points, some of their experiences being at the camps for, you know, a long period of time? Can you guys just tell us some of your experiences, being considering that you guys were at the camps for much longer than anyone else on this panel? What were some of your experiences? What are some of the things that you took away? You can even say that this is a continuation of the question that was asked of them. Like, what was the most important thing that you took away?
The most important thing that I take from the camp is that everyone there is acting not from getting something sponsored for them to be there. I mean, I personally quit school. I got two kids. I lost my car. Everyone here has made a sacrifice, and everybody there has quit careers to be there. I just want to let you know that, you know, we're humans too. My name's Ozuya Chikala. My government name's Henry Crow. I'm Oglala Lakota.
Bonjour, Indigenous Kaz, Oshki Migazi, Odawa Zagaining. My name is Charlie Thayer. I'm from Minneapolis. I graduated in May, and I've been on the road ever since, preparing for the Standing Rock leading up to it. For the 4 years prior to, we fought against Enbridge as they tried to run a pipeline through an Anishinaabe land, treaty land in Minnesota called the Sandpiper Pipeline. We beat that, and when we beat that, Enbridge pulled out, made the decision that they were going to pull out all of their funding and their investment into the Sandpiper and put it into the Dakota Access. So when they moved, we moved over there. A lot of our people that were on the front lines fighting against that moved over to the Dakota Access Pipeline. I was arrested on September 13th and charged with criminal trespass. 2 weeks ago, my charges were dropped, and hopefully that sets precedence for other charges that are yet to come for my relatives that are still fighting cases out there. I think one of the most important things that I've learned is that I've taken from this is there's a stronger movement that's been developed and built for the water. As you can see, it's me standing along my brothers and sisters up here. We've been traveling. We just came directly from the Sundance Film Festival, where they were premiering two documentaries on on the Dakota Access Pipeline, but yet the Sundance is funded by Chase Bank. And so we went there. We've been doing a lot of work on the divestment campaign. These banks that have money invested in the Dakota Access Pipeline, such as Wells Fargo and Chase, we've been shutting banks down to raise awareness. Since we've started at the beginning of December, we've helped divest $45 million from banks that are funded in the Dakota Access Pipeline. And I think that's a beautiful thing because it shows us that we have the power to do this, and we're not going to stop. We're going to continue pushing until the next bank pulls out of their funding with the Dakota Access Pipeline. So that's why I'm here. Thank you for having us here, Miigwech.
My name is Rafael Gonzalez, Puerto Rican Dakota from Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm a water protector. I've been at the camp. Now I've been at the camp for about a couple months now, and traveling with these guys doing divestment campaigns, trying to get the banks to pull their money out and trying to convince people to pull their own money out as well, because there's power within us all. We're all frontline warriors here, and we're still at the camp. We're headed back to the camp to be on the front line. We showed up to an action that wasn't planned by us, but we came in to help, and we all felt the violence that Morton County and the National Guard and mercenaries have continuously inflicted upon us, as water protectors and people who are protecting the land, protecting our treaty rights, protecting the water and all that is sacred. I got shot in the leg on the front line with a bean bag, with a large size bean bag. And that was probably some of the most excruciating pain. I got hit, and then I got hit with some rubber bullets. And then we all also got hit with tear gas, rubber bullets. And we really just came in to protect and de-escalate and protect what was happening that day. That was on the night that Obama denied Leonard Peltier clemency. So there was a lot of significance to that day, for us all. And we're still at the camp. And right now, how I'm feeling is, you know, now more than ever is when we need to be there. And people need to pay attention because of the White House and Donald Trump and his executive action to go ahead and build these pipelines. Like, we need to be there as much as possible to protect. And I know it's going to be dangerous. It has been dangerous, but we're here to protect, and we're all ready and willing to put our lives on the line for it. You know, there's certain levels of, I get mixed emotions a lot about certain things. You know, just days ago, the chairman, Chairman Archambault and the tribal council announced that they wanted to close down the camp in 30 days. And for me, that's really conflicting, because I don't want to have a fight with our own people. And I want to continue to stay at this camp because this camp is our home. And the message that I got from that is that they want us to move off and not fight the way we know how to fight and the way that we're going to continue to fight. And I did feel like a level of lateral oppression with that, you know, and I don't want to see that. And I'm just here today to let you guys know that we're going to stay at the camp and we're still going to be on the front line.
How matakia pe chante waste na pe chu zapalo Natani Means Machapalo. Hello everyone. My name is Natani Means. I come from three different nations, Oglala, Lakota, Umaha, and Dene. Son of a great freedom fighter who fought for treaty rights all his life. I've been at the camp since August. I was getting really emotional right there because every single time these other protectors spoke, I was there. And it's hard in your head to replay those memories. Like the dog attacks, I was right there. Like the water cannons, like the bridge. And I was arrested on October 27th for protecting treaty land, my own land. was charged with a felony and two misdemeanors. And I was thrown in Burley County for protecting my people, protecting my rights as an American Indian. There's so much to say right now, and there's so much little time, but I just want to thank everybody for showing up and caring for this cause, because like they've been saying, it's all of our water. We went there understanding that, and we're still there understanding that. And I just want to share the nights it gets the coldest, when it's negative 40 and your fire goes out and you're cold as hell, cold. You go outside to get more firewood or to use the bathroom, and I look up at those stars and I've never felt more free. And that's the reality of it, is that I've never felt that freedom. My father said, wounded knee, the freest I've ever felt. I know freedom because I felt freedom. And I was always envious because I don't know freedom. I grew up on a prisoner of war camp. I still had that mentality. People bring that mentality to those camps, but that place is freedom because you're living in treaty land. And I've tasted freedom. I've tasted it now. For 6 months, I've tasted freedom. I'm not letting that go unless I have to be free from this world. I'm not letting that girl go. So I'm staying in that camp because I'm free in that camp. And it's going to take me being free from this world to be out of that treaty land. That's the decisions we made, and we've had to face real shotguns on the front line pointed at us. And you have to make that decision. Am I dying today? And that's not a decision that you want to make. But once you accept it, it's hard. You lose a piece of you. I've lost pieces of me. But we're gaining that healing back. And divest your money.
My name is Anton Edwards. I come from the Omaha and Lakota people. And Natani just basically explained how I feel. But I want to tell you about a dream my cousin had. His name's Trevon. He's my older cousin. And I was young. I was about 13. And he came over and he was talking to me. And he's kind of crazy. He's kind of into gangs and stuff. So I was just hanging out with him. And out of nowhere, he gets spiritual on me. He's like, hey, I had a dream. And he told me about this dream and how our people all come together. He's like, every single one of the tribes came together. And he's like, the enemies, they squashed that. And they worked together. And we lived in teepees and we lived Olwe. And we were fighting against the government and the National Guard, the army. And we were riding our horses and it was all Olwe. And I thought he was crazy. I just kind of blew it off. And one time I was sitting with Henry Crow in the truck. We just came back to our yurt. It was freezing out, and it was about 2 a.m. I don't know what we're doing. We're just hanging out. But I just remember thinking about that, because we're sitting there, and there's a big old herd of horses that just came running by us. And there's teepees. They ran between teepees. And then they ran off into the dapple lights. And I was like, what are we doing? You know, while we're listening to some beats, writing some music. But it was crazy. It just kind of made me laugh. But I was just thinking, I was like, man, my cousin was right. And, you know, I felt free. Same thing Natani felt, just kind of in a different way. I was just kind of looking at it all. And, you know, coming here, I came here the day that first, that live feed where they pulled our people out of sweat, and where they tore down our teepees, and where they beat. I saw Natani. I knew Natani. You know, Natani is my brother, and I saw him getting pulled and arrested on a video. I seen other people getting beat. I remember watching that, and I it takes a lot to make me tear up, you know, and cry. I don't usually. I'm not that type. You know, I could hold things in, but when I watched that, I started pacing around. I was tearing up. And instantly I just started packing my bag, and I told I went to my mom and dad and let them know, as you know, call my sisters over, and I told them, as I'm going up, and I was like, if you want to come, then come with me. And I left that day, and I've been there ever since. I was supposed to go just for a weekend and come back, and, you know, I haven't left since, and I don't plan on leaving. And when I got there, I had my own camp, you know, as I kind of had singers around me and stuff because I sing. And somehow every single person right here gravitated towards each other for a reason. And I remember I've been to all the actions. My first time meeting Henry was at the river action where we swam across, and I was freezing. But, you know, we've been to all these actions, and I remember the one with the water cannon. I remember standing there, and I was kind of scared. You know, I was looking at them. They're shooting, just hearing the shots. It kind of made me jump. I was yelling for my sister, and she started screaming my name, and I heard her on the bridge because I was off the side of the bridge, and I run up. As soon as I get to her, we're about this close to each other, and there's a big bang. Just blows up right between us, and we all run the opposite way, and I can't hear for the rest of the night. I couldn't see for like 10 seconds, and I remember I was scared, but being at camp, I've been able to spend my time with all my brothers right here. And just the other night, four nights ago, is when my bro Raphael got shot. You know, Hank took about 10 bullets to the back. Luckily, he had a vest on. But, you know, we laugh about it now, but, you know, we just, Native people like to laugh. But at the time, it was kind of scary. But, you know, doing that, we're at the very front. You know, every time I looked to my side, it was just like this. I seen these same people, and I wasn't scared. I didn't have that fear anymore. And like Natani said, you lose something when you accept the fact that you could die. And I think everyone here has accepted that. You know, so when we look next to each other, we're not scared. There's no fear, you know, because we're willing to put our life on the line. And I just want to thank the students here for going down there, you know, and anybody else who's even thought of going down there. And thank you guys for coming here and showing that you support what's going on. This is a issue for all human beings, all living things. Everything. You know, it's not one single tribe, not two tribes. It's every single thing. You know, so thank you guys for shedding light and having this. And thank everybody for being here. And I hope you guys divest your money. And, yeah, if you can make a trip down there, that'd be dope. thank you, guys.
Okini Sunitaniku Akstoki. I'm from Blackfeet, from Brandon, Montana. I'm also from Dene, from Tuba City, and also from Alaska, from a village north of Anchorage, in Yupak. For me, I've been there since August. I've been here on this journey, you know, from here to here the entire time that brother was saying earlier. But looking at things there, when you're there, as an indigenous person, you start to see things from an indigenous perspective and an indigenous lens, where you are realizing what your people have gone through. You are realizing your greatest strengths and attributes within yourself that weren't yours to begin with. They were always your ancestors. And you have those because of them, and they put that in you. Sitting Bull took refuge with the Blackfeet a long time ago. And Sitting Bull had so much respect for the Blackfeet, he named his son Crowfoot. And I'm standing with, out there, we're standing with descendants of Sitting Bull. But we're also working, there's friction between also the descendants who killed Sitting Bull. So there's a continuous link between the past and the present that's happening there, that there is no future unless we make these choices out there in a certain way. And I'm becoming more and more aware of the indigenous lenses that are required for us to move back from take these things that happen in here and re-implement them in here, in our mind. And so for me, the biggest things that I'm taking away is that I see these people. You know, they talk really nice about themselves, but these people during certain times, they are the backbone of a lot of things that you don't see. You see all these other people, you know, talking, but these guys are too busy to be talking. You know, these guys are too busy out there all the time to be in the forefront. And so this is really rare for us to be out here like this. But, you know, taking these bullets, taking this mace, taking this tear gas. I've been arrested twice. I was poisoned in jail. I've had my truck shot up, windows slashed, followed, we've been running off of roads. You know, the list goes on. Like, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the resilience that I see within the people next to me that is beyond understanding. And it requires you to walk away from who you were, who you thought you were, who you thought you wanted to be, to what we need now. And for y'all, that's what I'm hoping you can possibly take away from what I'm saying, is that we are in a turning point, a pivotal turning point in history, where we have to stop what we're doing right now before it's too late for all living things. And we are not going anywhere. And we never did go anywhere. So I just want to say that this panel right here and these young people right here, you know, I'd like everybody out there in the live feed and everybody in here to know that we're not going anywhere. And to come stand with us.
We've been, you know, before every action, before every, and after every single one, what we like to do is, you know, we start with prayer and singing a song, you know, and we end it with a song too and a prayer. So right now we're going to sing a prayer song.
Doc, y'all say.